With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And today I'm going to talk about a perhaps less explored aspect of the Nazi camp system, and that was the treatment of what the Nazis viewed as habitual criminals, people that had been convicted of, shall we say, conventional crimes during the Weimar and the Nazi period. And who were still under suspicion as being part of a kind of a criminal subculture. Many who had left prison and had not reoffended were rearrested in the summer of 1936, as Himmler believed part of the kind of racial development of German society was a kind of a de facto war against the sort of the criminal underclass, and that this was going to be part of a process of almost kind of racial development, racial improvement, and that the criminal underclass overlapped with asocial elements, people that can't fit into the new German society, people with antisocial traits or behaviours, or people who can't simply embrace the kind of the spirit of the new Germany. Again, we read from KL, History of the Nazi Concentration Camps by Nicholas Waschmann. And he writes, with the appointment of Heinrich Himmler as chief of the German police in the summer of 1936, the path was clear for the creation of a nationwide criminal police. Over the following years, Himmler oversaw the formation of a large and modern force centrally coordinated in Berlin. Himmler used his new powers to mastermind a strike against ex-convicts. On February the 23rd, 1937, he ordered the Prussian State Criminal Police Office to conduct the first nationwide raid against professional and habitual criminals who would be arrested abruptly and taken to concentration camps. So this is interesting. This widens the scope of that we have within a kind of conventional understanding of the Nazi police state to look at this idea of the habitual criminal. Obviously, much of the thinking of Himmler behind what constitutes a habitual criminal is racialized. Sort of lesser races, Slavs and Gypsies, and much of the kind of the racial riffraff, as Himmler saw it, were more likely to present the possibility of reoffending. And every Gestapo officer factors racial thinking into their investigating. If they find a suspect who happens to have poor racial heritage, Gypsy heritage, or Slavic heritage, then the assumption that they either have committed crimes or are going to is factored into the investigation. Waschmann further writes, using lists compiled by earlier regional police officials, the Criminal Police Office selected the suspects and instructed forces around the country to strike on March the 9th, 1937. The raids went ahead as planned, And over the coming days, some 2,000 prisoners, the target set by Himmler, arrived at the KL, which had been primed by Eich, Theodor Eich, head of Dachau originally, and then administrator of the camp system. Almost all the prisoners were men, among them Emil Bargatsky, who was picked up by the police in Essen and sent to Lichtenberg with 500 others, other so-called criminals. The raids in spring 1937 resulted primarily from Himmler's determination to wipe out the criminal subculture. So again, this is an interesting thought, that Himmler saw there as being this stubborn and resistant subculture of criminality in Germany, one which somehow couldn't be removed by any other than violent authoritarian means. The various kind of sociologies of crime and studies of criminology, which are continuing apace throughout the 1930s, it's a real golden age for sociological inquiry. These obviously are of no interest to the Nazis. The idea that crime is caused through things like urbanisation and poverty and all these other complex factors the Nazis are disinterested in, and they are purely interested in the means to suppress it. And as far as Himmler is concerned, the great tool for breaking criminality is the camp itself, to break the will of the individual and to subsume that will to greater national or racial needs and priorities. Because the thing that we have to see here is that this wasn't simply an authoritarian approach to a fairly standard problem that all societies encounter, that of criminality and law-breaking. This was part of, again, Himmler's wider sense that the camp was a transformational system, and the camp was the means by which society can be reforged. Himmler constantly talks about the discipline of labour, about how by inflicting hard manual labour on deviant types consistently, that they can be changed. It's not a million miles away from Soviet thinking towards the camps in that regard. Himmler is happy to announce that criminality has dramatically decreased and that Germany is on the road to some kind of greater social cohesiveness as a result. Part of the reason for the influx of labour into the camps was economic factors. Shape SS policy, mass unemployment was on the decline by the late 1930s. The rapid recovery that Germany had seen, which was really quite illusory because it didn't result in higher living standards, had begun to see growing labour shortages. From 1936 onwards, the vast flow of finance of resources into rearmament meant that labour supply throughout the economy was in decline, and this has an impact on wages. And subsequently, the threat of wage-led inflation. And there was also concerns about labour discipline, because obviously when a country faces almost full employment, even a country without trade unions, as Germany now was, labour workers can still see that they have the ability to strike better and better bargains for themselves. So there was a fear that without a kind of what, you know, in Marxist terms would have been seen as a kind of reserve army of labour or a reserve army of the unemployed, labour might get the upper hand. Washman writes, at a meeting of senior government officials on February 11th, 1937, chaired by Goering, Himmler floated the idea of forcing some 500,000 Workshire individuals into labour camps, his proposal, which he had probably discussed with KL chief Theodor Eich, was too radical even for the Nazi state. So when Himmler met senior civil servants from the Reich Ministry of Justice 2 days later, he only mentioned plans for the selective detention of the Workshire. Hard work in a camp for up to 14 hours a day, he announced, according to the minutes, would show them and others that it is better to seek work in freedom than running the risk of being taken into such a camp. So the raids were designed to have, and the imprisonment was designed to have, a motivating effect on the economy. And this throws up a fascinating new way of looking at the camps in general as a means of communicating, a brutal means of communicating with the rest of German society, a means of sending clear policy messages to German workers in order to ensure that the labour force remained pliant. This, again, is a really, really fascinating approach by Waschmann here, and one I don't think has really been focused on in any great way before, though obviously if you're an academic and you've written about this and you want to take issue, please write in. Himmler, of course, saw his own power enhanced by more prisoners. He was the chief architect of the camp system, and his deputy Theodor Eich was the commandant of the entire, or the commander of the entire camp system by 1937, and flows of prisoners enlarged the camps and therefore enlarged their economic and their political potential. He wanted to transfer prisoners from the kind of the official legal system into the camp system and get his hands on inmates from state prisons as well. The prison minister Gertner was still in a position to say no to Himmler, but that wouldn't be basically the last time that Himmler would try to transfer state prisoners into the camp empire. So the SS camps became packed very quickly following the March 1937 raids against not just criminals but alleged criminals. And further suspects flowed in the following months. The prison authorities, the camp authorities, became stricter on the possibility of release. So most of those who were arrested in the spring and summer of 1937 were still inmates 2 years later when the war began. So the total number of criminal prisoners was high, with several thousand held in camps during 1937 to 1938.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
In 1937, most of them were sent to Sachsenhausen and Buchenwald, which completely alters the composition of the prisoner population in both camps. Shortly after it opened, Buchenwald took in 500 professional criminals from Lichtenberg, again another one, Emil Bargatzky, who along with Peter Forster had managed to escape from Buchenwald, who fled to Czechoslovakia and who was returned and eventually executed, having murdered a guard in order to get out. He was finally returned to Germany in 1938. By January 1938, there were 1,008 criminals, or so-called criminals, alleged criminals, in Buchenwald, and that made up over 38% of the camp's population. In 38 to 39, most of them would be sent to Flossenbürg, and along with Mauthausen, both Flossenbürg and Mauthausen became camps for alleged criminals, those men who were identified with the Green Triangle. Those who were arrested as kind of career criminals often were targeted by the SS, particularly as kind of figures of that needed to be particularly harshly punished. The reason why is for quite ideological reasons. These were supposed to be members of the Aryan racial community, but were seen as the kind of the failures, those who had conflicting political ideas, communists, socialists, were obviously kind of scorned and hated by the SS. But those who were almost kind of had no excuse were treated harshly as well. Rudolf Hess referred to them as brute and base, villains devoted to a life of crime and sin, and thought that they were the real enemies of the state, who were unable to be reformed. This is another key feature of the thinking about the criminal classes. The communists and socialists, with enough discipline and violence and work, they can be changed. But the kind of the thugs and the kind of what Marx would refer to as the lumpen proletariat, they were really somebody, a class that you couldn't do very much with, and perhaps you just needed to kind of keep them in check with violence. SS camp compound leader Hermann Baranowski greeted prisoners in 1937, saying, "Listen up, you filth. Do you know where you are? Yes? No? You don't know. Well then, I'll explain it to you. You're not in a prison, and you're not in a penitentiary either. You're in a concentration camp. That means you're in an educational camp. You are to be educated here, and we'll educate you all right. You may rely on that, you stinking swine. You will be given useful work here. Anyone not performing it to our satisfaction will be helped by it. We have our methods. You'll get to know them. There's no loafing about here, and let no one believe he can run away. No one escapes from here. The sentries have instructions to shoot without warning any attempt to escape. And we have the elite of the SS. Our boys are very good shots." And though this is obviously true, the camp did have lethal punishment for those trying to escape. And the camp SS guards assumed that because they were dealing with career criminals, these are the ones that are most likely to escape, that middle-class socialist intellectuals that have wound up in the camp are probably less likely to try to go over the wire than the criminal classes. So there are all sorts of kind of class-based assumptions tied up in all of this as well. The SS were quick to attack criminals inside the camp. They were, of course, easy to pick out by their green triangle. And they were thought to be more likely to be troublemakers, and so more likely to be deserving of violence. In Sachsenhausen, 26 criminals died in 1937, and 10 of them in 1 month, in March and April, which actually exceeded the death rate amongst political prisoners in the same period. So this kind of turns around an interesting and popular idea that's arguably slightly something of a myth about the camps, that it was the criminal classes that had it slightly easier, and the political classes who were the political prisoners who were at the bottom of the heap. Actually, at least in 1 month, the stats don't show that. It shows that there is more violence inflicted on the criminal elements. And the same was true of Buchenwald, where 46 professional criminals died during the first year inside the camp in 1937-38. Other inmates had hostility towards them too. If you had the green triangle and you were identified as a professional criminal, then it was feared that there might be some sort of, you might be put to some sort of kind use by the camp authorities. But political prisoners actually looked upon the criminal prisoners as the dregs of society, the kind of the useless criminal classes, and despised them. This was really the result of pre-existing social prejudices based around social class, which members of the SPD and even the KPD were not above. And it was also to do with the experience that some political prisoners had when they were in mainstream prisons and came across Germany's criminal elements, and you know, didn't fare very well against them, had unpleasant dealings with them as a result. However, most of the criminals who were incarcerated by the SS were not violent offenders. They were not the kind of career gangsters or violent criminals. They were mainly petty thieves. So small-time, what you would call property offenders, who were motivated largely by poverty. There were people like Emil Bargatsky, who was arrested during 1937, suspected of burglary. The Greens had no way of creating a kind of a united front with the other camp inmates. Now, the interesting comparison, I would say, in this situation, or contrast, is looking at the Soviet camps. In the Soviet camps, a gangster class, the Urki, existed. And the Urki were part of a kind of a much more established criminal underworld that predated the Russian Revolution and had survived Stalinism and was far more integrated into the camp system. So much so that kind of gangsterism within the camp system was fairly commonplace, overlooked by the camp administrators, and also put to various useful purposes by the camp administrators. That doesn't seem to be quite the same picture in the Nazi camps. So the majority of criminals aren't part of some kind of gang or gangsterism system. There is no solidarity for them. They are petty offenders who are no more or less likely to be violent than any other camp inmate. Some, of course, form friendships, and some form small little groups and cliques inside, but it's really not quite the same thing. Those bonds are not as strong as those amongst political prisoners, because there isn't an underlying political creed behind them. There isn't a past of ideological struggle or shared belief, and so the life for the criminal inmates was particularly hard, and the tensions between political and green prisoners, or red and green prisoners, was observable and real. They didn't really emerge from the brutality of the criminal prisoners, but mainly for the kind of elitism from the political prisoners and the ever-present competition for scarce resources, decent jobs inside the camps, decent rations or bearable rations, and sleeping conditions and all the rest. And these only intensify during the war, become harder and harder. So following the 1937 police offensive against criminals, Himmler and the police leaders planned the next move against social outsiders, and that would be against those they viewed as being work-shy and asocial, those who did not fit this other aspect, this non-criminalised aspect, but sort of this aspect of German society that deviated from Nazi ideas about work and industriousness and working towards building a new Reich. And that is what we're going to look at the next time we dip into the history of the camps. Anyway, thanks very much for listening. I hope you find this useful, helpful and interesting. And we'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Do remember to check us out at the Explaining History Facebook page, where we always put up new and interesting material. The Explaining History podcast Facebook group, should I say. And also, if you can swing by our Patreon page, we get by in a tiny sliver of ad revenue and an awful lot of goodwill. So any help you can give the Explaining History podcast so we can keep up putting out good free material for you, so much the better. Thanks, all the best, bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.